The old saying, a game of two halves, is rarely better defined than Reading roaring into an early lead against Cardiff before timing their collapse precisely in line with the referee's half-time whistle, allowing the visitors to claim a 2-1 win and banishing hopes of the Royals elevating themselves to a comfy 11-point cushion in the relegation battle. Welcome to the Tyler Sten Podcast, episode 296, the podcast by Reading fans. For Reading fans, I'm your host, Mark Mayo, joining you. And we're actually nearing that 300th episode milestone now, which will be a bit of a special season review, hopefully special for obvious reasons as we get towards that. I was actually in Club 1871 for the first time for the Cardiff game, which was great fun. And opposite me in the Dolan end was Ben Thomas. The view from the Dolan for the Tyler Sten. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, all right. Thanks, mate. I think I've just about recovered from yesterday. So, just want the season to be over now. That's all I want, just for us to stay up and you know, get to summer and rebuild. But, I'm just about over yesterday, I think.
Yeah, I've watched the highlights a couple of times now and I've justified certain things in my mind. I've got angry about other things. So let's have that all pour out now for the next 45 minutes or so. We'll get into the recap. Quick word on the Stoke game, which we had on Tuesday night, which was a victory, but unfortunately, you know, short-term memory and all that, Reading fans will obviously be focusing on the Cardiff game. Bit of news bites coming up later on, and then a big match preview as we look ahead to some Easter weekend games. Before we get into the recap, as always, a big thank you to our Patreon subscribers and our sponsors, ZCZ Films. Right then, let's do it then. It was two home games this week, and only one of them went well.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Quick word on the Stoke game then to start off. Really, Ben, this was... this is the sort of game that I'm actually quite glad we're not in the Premier League for, because if you turn up on a Tuesday night at home to like most teams, going to play up, it's going to be a good high quality game with lots of things going on about it and everything, but it's not going to be usually as fun or as silly as the Stoke game, a game where both teams missed about two sitters and all three goals that went in had their elements of just nonsense about them, and Reading came out on top and it was a bit scrappy at times and there was some good play and everything. Of quality wasn't abysmal or anything like that, but just one of those games that Reading had to come out on top of, and we've had it quite a few times in the last few weeks. Think about the Birmingham game as well. You play that game five more times and it probably does split a bit more evenly as to where the points go. Reading came out on top there, and that's all that matters, and that is the sort of game that we'll probably look back on in the summer, hopefully look back on and think those are the points that kind of kept us up.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of built on the, going back even further, the Barnsley game, really. You know, there was quite a lot of resilience in that game up at, Oakwell on the Saturday. So it was really important that we followed it up with a win, come what may. And getting the 4 points out of those two games, even after yesterday's result, now looks like a pretty good return. I was pleased with the Stoke game. It wasn't anything remarkable. They dug in, really. And just with Stoke scoring just before half-time, you kind of thought, well, what's the second half going to look like for Reading? And I was impressed, because it has been difficult to get the game management going, to get the the concentration levels kind of where we want them to be for the team. So it was really, really important to get the result. Chow did very little apart from score, but all good strikers do that, I guess. And overall there was some very positive positive vibes from the game. Drinkwater was very, very good. I thought Hoylett was excellent certainly in the first half. So defensively we looked a little bit better than we had been. Having said that, awful goal for Nyland to concede, and he knew it straight away, but it's the response. That's all we're looking for from this set of players, is always the response. And they did that. It won all at half time, coming back into the game in the second half, and it was just seeing that game out at that point to get 3 points. And you're right when you say, Mark, it could feasibly be the 3 points that keeps us up with the nature of the league and kind of the way that other teams have been performing as well. To follow that with a loss yesterday was very difficult to take. And it's going to be really interesting now as we move forward with the, you know, kind of the dog days at the end of the season, how well we're going to be able to pick up these points and where we're going to pick them up from, really. So the Stoke game, all in all, it was, you know, in isolation, it was a good result. The context of last season, it was a very, very good result. And I was very, very pleased on Tuesday night with the, you know, with the response that the players gave.
It's an interesting point about the goal just before half-time that we conceded in the Stoke game. One wonders, a bit of a hypothetical this, but if Cardiff would have broken and scored just before half-time on Saturday, would that have... I mean, I think definitely you can't get any worse, but that would have made Reading come out in the second half a bit better. But because we were so dominant in that first half, it was like an FA Cup game against a League One team. It really felt like that for me. I think we scored after about 6 minutes. And maybe if Cardiff had scored before the break, then, you know, we'd have come out in the second half. But let's focus on the first half to begin with. And we scored one of the best goals of our season. Morrison steps in to win the ball back. Zhao and Swift with a bit of link up. I thought in the first half, John Swift was in a lot of really good positions in behind Zhao. And that just didn't work in the second half for whatever reason. Tomic comes in, Yeardham on the overlap. Great cross, bullet header, 1-0, and everyone's having a great time. And Reading, you know, there weren't loads of chances to make it 2-0. I think John Swift had a 1-on-1, which it kind of got sprung on him a bit as we won the ball back. He didn't quite know what to do with. And it was just a general sense of domination that Reading had. And it just felt like that first half performance was so comfortable that it was impossible to imagine us the way the game went. But focusing on that first half, it was just fundamentally a really good performance.
Well, I think the first half, we did the basics. And you know, I think the reason we all enjoyed it, or most Reading fans enjoyed it, was because we did those basics. We'd not seen that consistently from our team this season. Whoever's been in charge of them, we've not seen that. And we didn't look, you know, Cardiff were not, you know, they weren't threatening, really, in that first half, largely because we kind of squeezed the play. We kind of compressed them quite well in midfield. But we had lots of attacking impetus. We had lots of attacking threat. And for me, you know, the turning point in the game was just before halftime, ironically, when Swift missed the chance. You know, and he knew that was a really good chance to go into the break sort of 2-0 up. And had that happened, you know, it would have been a very, very different second half, because we could have gone and got a third and potentially a fourth as well. But it was everything in the half that you'd want, apart from the second goal. You know, Nyland had to do very, very little. Was kind of a spectator, really. I thought defensively we looked quite solid. You know, still a little bit shaky at left back, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I was very pleased with it. You know, and it was enjoyable. Which is rare, you know, for this season, the way it's been going. It was quite nice to kind of be there at half-time and go, well, look, you know, 1-0 up, we're playing very well, effectively cruising in the game. You know, Cardiff were getting nothing from their fans. They didn't look like they were going to get anything out of the game at that point. And then, you know, second half of the game just turned on its head. And that's why I said post-match, and, you know, I still am to an extent, you know, very disappointed in the, again, the mentality and the basics that weren't there in the second half, that were there in the first. And that's my biggest concern, is that we can do that for 45 minutes or, you know, 46 with the injury time. But to then have that performance in the second half, it just smacks of a lack of, mentality and lack of attitude, really, if I'm honest. Because, you know, the goals that Cardiff scored were basic defensive errors that we committed, not just as a one person or two person, but as a unit. You know, midfield not tracking the runners, central defence out of position, you know, Tom McIntyre out of position for both goals, really. And it's very, very difficult to take that, because had we got those 3 points, you know, we'd be looking at a buffer of 11 points and that would be it. We'd be sat here going, well, we're talking more about next season than we are, you know, the potential panic mode for the rest of this season. And I think that's what's difficult. You know, we're going back to the context of the season and where we are. And that was just a really good opportunity to all but, you know, seal our safety in the Championship for next year.
Yeah, and that's the thing for looking ahead, and that thing of looking for next season, everything. And if we'd have won this game, then that would be where we're at. And it really did detect to me, little bit in that first half, like a few of the players who, you know, maybe it's a cynical point of view, but it felt like a few of the players who are kind of playing for their future outside of the club in reality, did show up in the first half. And you kind of thought, oh yeah, that's the real player that these clubs are going to be getting, that they're, you know, want to be adding a few more Ks onto the wages. Obviously, that's what they're looking to do at this time of season, as well as keep Reading up. Of course, that's important to them. But then in the second half, I think that's probably the half you see more as a scout, and you think, actually, these players are loose mentally and not able to put in those sort of professional 90-minute performances. And that's the question as to why did we collapse? Was it just because we didn't bother attacking, really? We did have I think we had more shots than Cardiff in the second half, just so sporadically. Controlling the game, there was no control of the game in the second half, no control of the ball. There were none of those moments when we did kind of have a bit of possession, and from the hour mark onwards, really. The first goal, it's a difficult one for the first goal, because I think it is a foul on Lucas Schau before it comes forward. And therefore, I don't want to... I mean, yeah, Tom McIntyre loses his man. That's a fact. Barbara Barman should play at left back the next game. I think we can all agree on that. I'm loath to criticise the first goal, because the referee beforehand had lost control of the game to such an extent that he was giving all of those fouls to Cardiff players. And then you kind of can't... whether if you think Zhao goes down softly or whatever, in the context of the game, he does that because all the Cardiff players are getting those fouls. That in that game is a foul, and the referee doesn't give it. And that's a sign that we were just in that scenario where the referee had lost control of the game. It wasn't going in our favour. And perhaps that kind of emphasises our mentality struggles, isn't it? When things are going against us, when there are outside forces we can't control not helping us, then that kind of makes things worse for us, maybe.
It is. I mean, you know, it was bang in front of me, but I was in line with the foul. It was a foul. You know, Lucas made a big deal out of it, as he often does. But, you know, players on that side stopped, and that's where the goal came from. You know, they won the ball back well. They used it to good effect, you know, pushed it down the side and cut in and scored. And, you know, you can't at this level, you know, we're talking about basics again, Mark. You know, you can't stop. You've got to keep playing. And there was a couple of players that were too busy sort of, you know, waiting for the whistle to blow to be pulled back for the foul. It wasn't, you know, they froze in the moment. And again, it's just get the ball back at that point, you know, whinge about it when the ball goes out of play or whatever, but he's not going to change his mind. And that's, again, is symptomatic of where we are. And, you know, I know Paul Ince came out and we'll hear from him in a bit, but he sort of blamed the referee. But you've got to look at the players again. You've got to just say, look, we're in this situation where we're still fighting for points to be able to stay in this league. You know, it's not given that we're going to stay up at the moment. It's likely, but it's not, you know, it's not confirmed by any stretch. And to come out and kind of criticise the referee and, you know, should have been that, it's just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense, because those players, you know, with the experience in that team, should have done better at that point. And I think, you know, that's been one of the most frustrating things for me, is that on paper, you look at that team and they've got the experience to be able to deal with these situations, and they don't do it. And they've not done it throughout the season. You know, and then they go on and score a very good second goal, which again came from, you know, central midfield not tracking the runners, centre-backs all over the place, and they end up winning the game out of nothing, really. And, you know, at that point, we're just chasing shadows. We're just kind of seeing the clock out. But, you know, 1-1, I'm thinking, just go and get another one. Just go and push on now. You know, push them back like we did in the first half. You know, because they were shaky in periods, Cardiff. They weren't good at all, particularly in that first half. So, it, you know, all in all, it just proved to be a very, very frustrating game. Very frustrating result, you know, given the other results that happened below us. And it, as I said, you know, it would have been a really nice... you know, way to kind of go into this last block of games, kind of knowing pretty much that we're almost there and we're kind of home and dry. But it didn't happen, and we've said that time and again this season. And you can understand the frustration from, you know, from fans kind of, you know, venting on social media, because this is not a one off. This is a consistent pattern of behaviour within the, you know, within the team that are playing games.
Well, that's the thing for me, and I completely agree on the players' side of points, but I would also say that the point of getting this kind of assumes there was some sort of wider logic at play with getting Paul Ince as manager, when obviously we have no idea what sort of logic was going on to get him given his time out of the game and everything. But Paul Ince as a player, fantastic player he was a, you know, I don't want to be unkind, but a fundamentals, a basics player who got stuck in, had the mentality fine or absolutely right, had the, you know, the basics, and didn't overexert himself. Maybe I'm a bit shooting a bit above my knowledge range here and describing his game, but that's the impression I've got from him as a man and as a player, and therefore as a coach, that's what he should be doing as well. He was, in theory, brought in to be the guy to get Reading doing the basics, get Reading organised, get them motivated, and then whatever. Like, he's not going to come in and we didn't employ him to come and install a passing game or anything like that. We just installed him to get the basics right. And to see the second goal, I mean, Drinkwater dives in, then doesn't track his marker. McIntyre gets dragged out and then slips. Deli Bashir was just motionless the entire time. I'm not sure he touched the ball after he came on. Morrison rushes out and then he's kind of caught in no man's land, and Cardiff players are just queuing up to finish the chance off, really. So it is what it is, really. The fear now for me going into these last block of games is of Barnsley or Derby doing a Fulham in 07-08, in which, I mean, this was even further into the season, and Reading actually... As annoying as it is, I looked back through the results of Reading's 07-08 when we got relegated from the Premier League under Steve Coppell, and effectively Fulham were down. And it was only like three games to go, and Reading had picked up some results, not enough obviously, but some results in the weeks beforehand. Fulham were effectively down 2-0 at Man City, as you know, with that half and then two games left after it. And they had to go and win all of their games to stay up, and they did. And that's what I fear now, is particularly with Derby's last three games, all very winnable. That's the thing that I'm concerned about now, is that Reading taking their eye off the ball and becoming the team that is caught by, a Derby team or maybe a Barnsley having a miracle run. And that's probably what it will take now. But I guess the fear is still there for that.
I think it's going to be very unlikely that Barnsley will turn this around. The thing that worries me is that they've got that game in hand against, I think, Blackpool, who have, you know, going nowhere very quickly. They've got nothing to play for and just treading water. You know, you look at our remaining games, you know, obviously Sheffield United away on Friday, which we'll lose because you're going to. And then we've got Swansea at home, who like Swansea a lot. You know,
I'm not actually going to Swansea, so we'll win that. Don't worry about that.
No, with Sheffield United you're going, aren't you? So we'll lose that one.
Oh, yeah, we'll lose that.
But the Swansea, you know, Swansea are a great team. And I really, really like Swansea. I like the manager there. I like the players they've got. You know, they have come up with some surprises this season, you know, most notably against Cardiff, you know, the other week when they beat them 4-0, which, incredible result, really. Then we've got Hull away, which, again, by that point, Hull will be safe. So you think, well, is that a good opportunity for us to get some points? West Brom at home, who have got a very, very outside chance of making the playoffs. And then the final game of the season, which is the one that really concerns me and has done for weeks, is Luton away, final game. Because, you know, hypothetically, Luton could drop out of the playoffs by that point and will be needing a win to get back in, or, you know, jostling for position in terms of those playoffs. But anyway, and that's the one that just really concerns me, because we could be in a situation where that could be our decider as well. And, you know, Luton is a difficult place to go this season. They've done incredibly well to get to where they are. And I'm just looking at them thinking, have we got the mentality? Have we got the tactical ability in the nous to be able to get points out of this? You know, really, you're looking at the Swansea home game and the West Brom home game. You win both of those, and I think we'll be fine. But, you know, Barnsley just won't go away, regardless of where they are right now. You know, that game in hand, they've got the possibility to stay up. I really feel that Peterborough are gone. You know, it's just a matter of time for them. Derby to a similar point as well. And, you know, you mentioned a good point about, you know, we got relegated with the Fulham scenario. I just, football's different now. I just don't see these teams picking up the required points that they need. You know, because they've been dreadful all year. You know, Derby had a bit of a purple patch around Christmas, didn't they? But other than that, they've not been great. You know, Peterborough have been absolutely shocking. Same with Barnsley, really. And, you know, all we can do is take care of ourselves. And I just feel like the home games are the ones that we've really got to target and go, have to get 6 points out of those two games. We do that and we should be okay. But, you know, they're not they're not a great set of games, to be honest with you. We'll see. But we just need to take care of ourselves, and we've not done that all season. So I suppose the question is, can we do that in the next 5 games? Hopefully we can.
Yeah. Well, that's the question. That's a question for Paul Lintz, who we'll hear from now to end the recap, and then we'll go into the mailbag.
I thought first half we were very good. When you play that well in the first half, you've got to be ruthless. I mean, two golden opportunities to make it 3-0. You're coming at half-time 1-0 and you think, you know, you're the kind of thing, if you don't take those opportunities, you're going to get punished. And that's the most disappointing thing for me. You know, we should have put the game to bed. Smith has a golden chance. Lucas has a golden chance. Got to be ruthless. It just makes it easier for everybody else. And we weren't. And then obviously the ref, with a diabolical decision against Lucas. It's a blatant foul. I've seen it time and time again. And it changes everything. You know, they get the goal on the back of that. He'll go home, watch Match of the Day, put his feet up. It won't bother him, but it will bother us, you know, because it's a blatant foul. And when you get to this stage of the season, you want the proper ref to make the right decisions at the right time.
You're listening to the Tarthurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
So then, a couple of questions, which I think we've probably covered off to start with the mailbag. Get your questions into the Twitter. We'll always put a post out for people to send their questions in. Facebook as well. The email, thetirelessend@gmail.com is our email. So get in some questions. Elise Season saying, what was that second half? Little Gem saying, just want WTF, which I think we've probably just about covered. Jack Killick saying, I'm happy for Reading to limp over the line this season if it means we don't have Paul Lintz in charge next season. What are your thoughts? If we'd won against Cardiff, I'd be very concerned. I would think he's the man to take us forwards. Now, this thought came into my mind during that first half when we were playing so well. And I was a bit, perhaps it's a bit of a jinx, but I was a little bit concerned we were almost playing too well. And therefore, Ballins would be given the reins off the back of a Sterling performance or whatever. And that didn't happen, or hasn't happened so far, at least. Certainly didn't happen for the performance. There were some minor claims of Ballins being offered the job. I mean, the Daily Mail apparently, this is according to the 72 website, had it in their paper on Sunday that he's been offered the job. As far as I'm concerned, Daily Mail haven't even put that on their website, which suggests that it's not like something they're particularly invested in as a rumor or anything like that. So probably not something that I pay too much credence to at the moment, but what it probably does show is that the possibility obviously is there for him to come in. And you know, I said last week, Ben, that if he keeps us up and everything, then great, and he moves on, then I'm happy with it. I've still not seen enough for him to be in charge next season, because next season we're going to need someone who we can build a team around. I don't like saying things like, oh, we need a DNA or whatever behind a manager, but we're going to need a new manager to come in as soon as possible and say, I want to play this way. And because we've got to build an entire squad, we can build a squad around that way of playing. Paul Lintz isn't the man to do that for me. Do you agree with Jack? Are you happy for us to limp over the line if it kind of does mean that we don't get Paul Lintz long term?
Oh, God, Jim, it's a great question. And he's, you know, I totally agree with the sentiment and what he's saying there. It's just bizarre, isn't it? You know, imagine supporting a club where you're desperate to stay in the league, like you really want to stay up, but you don't want to do so well that they end up giving your interim manager or our interim manager the job full time. It's a crazy situation, but you know, this is Reading Football Club in 2022. But my thing really with the manager is that I put quite a lengthy tweet out yesterday. I like Paul Lintz. You know, I've met him recently. You talk very, very well. It's just like, we're just going to do this and we're going to, you know, do our best to stay up. And he came across really, really well as a player. You know, you touched upon his playing career, but he was phenomenal. You know, I grew up watching him for United, and then obviously he went to Milan when you know, Italian football was at the very top of world football. And you don't, you know, it's rare that they had kind of British players go over and do as well as he did in the position and the kind of the style of play that he had. He was phenomenal for Inter Milan for the time that he was there. So I have nothing against Paul Lintz, and it's, you know, it's not a personal thing there, but it just, I've said it all along, I want the club to be completely reset on and off the field in the summer, because we've had all about this, we've just got to stay up, just got to do this, and then we'll deal with this. My key question on the manager search, and I don't think the people in charge can really think like this, because they've shown the ability that they can't do it at all over the last few seasons. You know, whether or not they're going to go, right, we're going to get another short-term manager in just to see us through this difficult next season, which we all know is going to be tough. You know, we all know we're going to be pretty much in the same situation as we are now next season. And whether or not they're going to say to that person, just get us through this period of EFL sanctions, keep us in the league, get us out of that. Or, as you say, they're going to get a manager in who ideally has been in work, you know, in the last few months, and is someone that is understanding of the processes of the English leagues, and say, right, it's a complete rebuild. We're going to back you. Whatever happens, here's a 3-year contract. Get on with it. You know, and the fans kind of then have to accept it and move on. You know, there are a lot of permutations with that, but I just don't feel that the, you know, the football acumen of the people at the club is non-existent for me. So I don't see them really thinking very carefully about this. It's going to go on recommendations. And what I'd like us to see is, or what I'd like to see us do is to kind of look at League One and say, well, hold on, which managers are working under really tough conditions that have done quite well? You know, Ian Everett at Barnes, at Bolton's been really good. Darren Moore at Sheffield Wednesday, who I really like. You know, I've always been a big fan of the Cowley brothers, who are at Portsmouth now. You know,
these are managers. Gareth Ainsworth at Wickham.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he comes up repeatedly, but he, you know, why not go after him? You know, let's put the feelers out to these people and say, look, this is the situation, you know. And there are a lot of managers in that league that I look at and go, do you know what, they could do a job for us. You know, it might not be, you know, we're not talking kind of Steve Coppell or Brian McDermott, as full due respect to these managers, but we need someone to get behind, and we need someone that we can believe in, and we need some sort of stability. Because if they go with Vince, as we said off air, we guarantee we'll be in a situation in December. The club will become toxic again. All of the good stuff that might have happened over the summer will be out the window, and they'll be reverting to type. And there's no point in doing that. I'd rather they just looked at it and gone, we've thought about it. You know, we've done it as quickly as possible, but with some sort of effort in terms of bringing these people in. He's got a 2-3-year contract. He's got these players. Let's just get behind him now. That's what we want. And that's what I want to see. I don't buy the whole, well, who would want it? They haven't asked anybody. They're not, you know, it's not like we're inundated with rumours, or like the club are going, right, we're going to talk to this person, or we're going to approach this club to talk to this manager. We haven't done any of that. And that's the most frustrating thing about it. And people come back to the, you know, the Paunovic statement, where they want to, you know, they said, we're going to start the search immediately. We've been lied to as a fan base, because that's never happened. That I can categorically, you know, I say categorically guess, but I'm absolutely convinced that search has never, ever happened. And they always knew that they were going to go with Vince until the end of the season. And if they do that again, that not only are they going to lose fans, those fans will never come back, but there's going to be more protests, more anger, more resentment. And I think, you know, from my perception of social media and the way people have been talking, is that Ince isn't, you know, he's kind of the figurehead for this problem. It's not a personal thing against Ince. It's the fact that the owners and the people that run the club would go, all right, mate, you've kept us up. Here's a contract for the next season. Off you go. It's just smacks of laziness, and it just smacks of you know, no idea of what's going on. And apart from that, he hasn't kept us up yet. So what were they basing on the fact that they're potentially going to give him another contract? He hasn't done what he's set out to do yet. So it's very, very complicated and very frustrating. And, you know, I could talk all night about this manager situation, but I really don't feel that appointing Ince for next season is the right thing to do for this football club at this moment in time, because they are at an absolute crossroads about how not just next season is going to go, but for next, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons moving forward. And they've got to get the fan base back on side, and this appointment, you know, en masse won't do that.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with a lot of that. I'm a little bit more optimistic on the manager search side of things, because we as a club don't really generate rumours, partly because of the size of our local media, partly because of the nature of the club, and who's kind of, you know, the turnover of the club means that people with sources and stuff has kind of died out a little bit. I mean, how many people saw Paunovic come in until about a week before it happened? etc. I mean, they kind of the Ince situation kind of smacks up the Mark Bowen situation, and Bowen was better than Ince, and they did give him a contract, and they sacked him anyway. So I don't understand why they go with an interim man and kind of repeat the same process. But there we go. It's just something we'll have to keep an eye on. And I think fundamentally that last point is the most important point. He has not kept us up yet, so I don't understand why the club. I'm sure he's very potentially among the candidates, and I wouldn't be annoyed if the club sat down and thought, should we keep him, and then had a conversation, because they're allowed to have that conversation. He's earned that right to have that conversation. I just don't think it should go any further than that. Other question for the mailbag then this week. Matt Williams saying, from the start ops meeting, it's clear we need big changes to improve the club's relationship with the fans. I really struggle to see the direction the club is going from a community perspective and feel they're not really bothered about doing anything drastic. Can you give me any hope? I know there were some quote-unquote initiatives, but it feels like the club are intent on using small plasters to cover a big hole. The Coventry game really worried me. It showed me how at best misguided and at worst arrogant the club's attitude to connecting with the fan base is. Well, usefully, Ben, you're quite high up in Star, so you've been part of these meetings and everything and know what this club have come out with. I have read over the notes from the last meeting, which I think got released in the last few days. So fundamentally, they're kind of two things I took from it. And the first is that the club, yeah, there are a couple of things they're doing. I know that there was a big schools kind of giveaway for this game, which is why there were 19,000 fans at Cardiff game. Good, happy with that sort of stuff. Secondly, is that when it comes to things like ourselves and TTE, who I guess are in some way responsible for the club's relationship with the fans by having some people listen to our podcast being about the club, we're hopefully going to be able to go in the summer. I know this is in the meeting notes, so this isn't kind of necessarily surprise news or whatever, but we're hopefully going to get a chance to go in summer, speak to some people from the club. We've done loads of interviews with people from the club before. We've done, you know, academy people, managers, etc. So we've just not had the chance to do it that much recently, and that's kind of, I mean, I'm not going to start playing any kind of games with that, but that's just the fact of the matter. If we get the chance to do it, and I'd absolutely love the chance to sit down with someone like Dayong Pang in the summer. Obviously, like Michael Jilks and anyone from the club behind the scenes, recruitment, academy, whatever, we're ready to do a show with and to chat with. And it's not, I'm not going in there with gotcha questions. It's about actually, kind of as Matt says, in just improving the club's relationship with the fans and the fans understanding what's going on and everything. So that's one thing I took from it. If we, kind of selfish perspective, get a chance to do that, I would recommend the club do that, whether it's, you know, ourselves or not. Second point I got, Ben, is that there's a lot of the times it just came back to money. And when it comes to things like, I know the Reading Academy Twitter and just general coverage of that sort of stuff, it does come down to manpower and money. The club don't have that. Unfortunately, those sort of things fall in the profit and sustainability rules with which the EFL are obviously not letting us really spend, and we've kind of put ourselves into a corner in. And it's just, it does feel to me like just a consequence of that. And whether that's the fault of the people at the club or the situation or any particular individuals, it just seems like an unfortunate fact now. And whether the thinking behind improving it is there, or whether they are just waiting for the summer or whatever, but it just seems like we aren't able to, physically speaking, create as much of this sort of stuff that we would like to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing because it's a massive, it could be a massive answer, but I'll try and paraphrase it. So what Matt's saying there is for me spot on. I don't think it's arrogance from the club. I think it's not reading the room or kind of more trepidation about doing things rather than just doing it and seeing what happens. You know, like if you can do something once and it doesn't work, and you go, okay, fine, we'll scrap that. Or you can do it and it works, you do it for sort of five or six games and you move on to something else. But what we've had, you know, at this club over the last, you know, three, four, five seasons is a continual decline in effectively customer relations, right? That's the way that I see it. And, you know, the club, we're obviously short of money. We know that. And they are understaffed. We know that for a fact. You know, and the things that we want to see are not happening. So what I've, and it's not all on me because there are other people involved in this, but what I've wanted to drive and what I've wanted to do is kind of small step stuff. And, you know, stuff that I'm proposing and I'm talking to our other fans about, and, you know, Star in general, and people at the club through, you know, emails and phone calls, is trying to come up with things that are not going to cost money. So for me, the halftime entertainment can be very, very cheaply done consistently. And it doesn't have to be, right, this is the activity we're going to do. We're going to do that for 10 games or for the whole season, and that's it. We can mix things up. And I, you know, I've been honest. I said I will more than happily get on that pitch, and I will host it, present it, whatever, at halftime, if that's what they're looking for. I'll do it for free. You know, and there's so many other people that have come forward after that kind of information went out in the week and said, look, I'm happy to do this. You know, let's get local artists involved. Let's just do anything, you know, and because what we've got at the moment is it's not a sellable product to regular fans and non-regular fans. And the club will say, well, it's because we've not been great on the pitch. That's part of it for me. You know, there is a core of 5,000-6,000 fans that go regardless, and you want to look after them as well as try and attract new fans. That's kind of where I come in, you know. And they've talked about, you know, restrictions and COVID. Well, that hasn't stopped Charlton Athletic, who I work with professionally on stuff that I do in my day job, doing what they're doing with their community trust and how they're engaging young people and how they're giving away, you know, free tickets and all the rest of it. And I know the club have started to do that now, but it's doing it regularly, and it's thinking about how are we going to engage people to come to the games and then stay. That's what we want, right? So all I'm trying to do at the moment is gather ideas that are cost effective, i.e. free, and that, you know, if there is a cost, do it incredibly cheaply, to be able to go to the club and say, look, these are the reasons to do it, and there are reasons, you know, there are no reasons to not do it. We don't want the club to say no to this stuff. We want to give it a go. And that's kind of the forward thinking element of this at the moment. You know, it's people understand that the club are understaffed and they're stretched, and people are doing, you know, 5 or 6 jobs every match day. We get that. So let the fans help you out. There is people there that want to help. There are people there that want to you know, push the club forward and make it better for everyone. There's no shame in asking for help. And you know, not just me, but Star, you know, you guys that run the pod, you know, you'll all chip in and do it. You know, we've got Dave and Alex who created Dingle off their own backs, which is a brilliant game if you haven't played it, by the way. It's infuriating, but it's fantastic. But he said, look, I'll knock up a quiz for the scoreboard at half time. You know, anything like that is gonna move forward. And there'll be fans out there going, oh, we don't need gimmicks, it's not a circus, all the rest of it. And I understand that to a point. But, you know, we've got to think bigger picture and how we can start engaging people and bring them back, you know, getting those ticket initiatives, getting them to hold on to something. When the football's rubbish, you want something else to take your mind off it. And we all know the kind of season that we're in for next year. And I'd much rather have, you know, more people involved and kind of making it about the fans and making it about Reading as a town and Berkshire as a county and so forth than what we've got at the moment. And all I'm asking the club to do is just listen to the ideas that we've got and engage in conversation and come up with something that is going to work moving forward. You know, something that I'm unashamedly very passionate about, because I want, you know, I want people to come back to the games. I want people to be proud of Reading Football Club. I want people to be, you know, interested in what the team are doing and kind of get that connection back. You know, that doing podcasts with players and interviews with players from, you know, from our point of view, from EPR's point of view, I'm sure, from any other people that do podcasts, they would love to do that, sit down with the club. And as you say, not to catch them out, but to kind of go, look, just tell us about what's going on, you know, how you feel about this season, just having more access to those people. Because we're not all bad, we're not all trying to catch the club out, but it needs to be moved forward and it needs to be better than what it is now, fundamentally. And if anyone in the fan base can help do that and drive that, then so be it, because it's not, you know, it's everyone's club and we want a lot of people and to be involved in those changes and making it better, basically.
Yeah, no, I think that's 100% it. If it's a shortage of ideas or whatever that the club is suffering from because of understaff and because of the money and everything, then I sympathise with that a lot. But fundamentally, as you say, people like yourself and, you know, I did He said it can't involve the pitch, the halftime game. So I was like, why don't you get the upside downy scale electrics thing they used at Gladiators? Maybe that's too expensive. But people will come up with ideas. You'll get that sort of stuff from people if you put out the call and if you're willing to it. And I suppose one thing I do, I mean, the other week I watched some away fans and home fans kick a ball in a skip at Peterborough. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel to really hit the nail on the head, or at least provide something that people will watch and have a giggle at. But I suppose maybe there is a sense within the club that the things that have been done in the past, and I kind of think back to like that song that the Thai owners did and stuff like that, and maybe it's just things have stung them in the past and they're a little bit worried about, because you know what it's like, if they do something silly and it goes wrong and it goes on social media, then you're the laughing stock for the evening and you're twitching and that doesn't work and it is a bit embarrassing. But maybe that's what the club is fearing or something. I just think fundamentally, if it's a shortage of money, then I understand that, but you can still make things happen. Bit of inventiveness. If it's a shortage of ideas, people are out there with ideas. And then after that, you know, we'll see how it goes for next season, because obviously nothing's going to change hugely between now and the summer. Maybe that's partly what it is as well, as the club is just trying to get through to the summer and have this big old reset and then kind of see where they're at.
Well, I think, you know, just going back to what, you know, to what Matt said in his question, you know, I hope Matt doesn't mind me. I hopefully he's listening, because we've answered his question in quite a lot of detail. But, you know, if he's not, maybe someone can send it to him. But, you know, he comes across as someone who's a pretty balanced bread and fat. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not very little overreaction from Matt and you know, calls it as it is. And if he's seeing that, then other people will be feeling that as well. And this is it. It's the alienation of the fan base that's happened over the course of not just this season, but, you know, general seasons. And it's very, very difficult to, you know, to poll everyone and go, right, what's your biggest issue with the football club? You know, what are you most annoyed about? Whatever. Because everyone's answer will be different. But the general consensus is that they want stuff to be a bit more fun, a bit more accessible. You know, they don't want to pay £3 for a cup of tea or whatever, which is perfectly understandable. Now, I'm not an economics guy, so I'm never going to start talking to the club about prices, because it's not for me to go, well, you know, charge this or charge that. That's up to them. But it's got to be competitive, and it's got to be like any other consumer product, because that's what football is these days. And at the moment, we've got a product that isn't working on the pitch, hasn't worked on the pitch for a little while, and it's not working off the pitch either. And I'm pretty sure that if you looked at Reading fans and talked to them, they would take one or the other. You know, we win a couple of games, everything's great. We lose games, but they've still got match day experience to hold on to and be with their mates and stuff. And as you said, have a laugh and a bit of fun. And that's all I'm asking at the moment, is just to sit down and go through these ideas and try and thrash things out, because it, you know, I don't see it not working. I really don't. And engaging people is the most important thing that the football club can do right now.
Yeah, well, any ideas, and any people who do want to get involved, we're always happy to facilitate being a kind of middleman to get some ideas to the club, and obviously through Star and everything like that. There are plenty of avenues if you're listening to this and you have any great opinions on what's going on in this exact sort of department. Always do fire in those questions and thoughts to the Tarlest End. And yeah, we're absolutely keen for big things to happen on and off the pitch in the summer. So in the meantime, let's focus on now. Go into News Bites and cover what else has been going on around the club this week.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So Reading FC women aren't in action till the 24th because of the international break. That's West Ham. Then they've got Leicester and Man City. That'll be the season done in the WSL. Under 23s, they've got the Barks and Bucks Cup semi-final on Monday the 11th at 7:30 kickoff at the SCLS. Is that, I mean, I tried to find it earlier. This kind of goes back to what we talked about 2 minutes ago. I couldn't really find any ticket details or anything like that floating around. I might have been looking in the wrong places, i.e. the club website. I don't know if you know any more, Ben, about whether this is a game we can presumably go to and watch a little local semi-final.
Yeah, you can. I don't want to get people's hopes up, but I think it might be free. I think.
A lot of the other 23 games are free, so that sounds about right. But yeah, that's
if you keep talking, I'll Google it pretty quickly. I'll come back to you.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's not quite easy to find out. But yeah, that's Monday 11th at 7:30. So a nice little, hopefully, game to go along, get into the final. That would be good fun for sure for the kids' team. And yeah, it's actually quite nice to be involved in those little competitions. It's perfectly harmless, I think, and gives a few extra games to the young lads. Under-18s, a comeback 2-1 win away at Aston Villa keeps them 10th in the Premier League South. Now, the PL South under-18s this year has kind of ended up being a bit of a split into two leagues, basically, those at the top and those in the bottom half. Reading in the bottom half, but as the season's gone on, they've kind of got more of a chance of being the best of the rest, as it were, and kind of winning that mini division in the bottom, I think it's the bottom eight teams or so, of which they're kind of third at the moment. So, yeah, it's not been a bad season all for the under-18s. Under-23s have struggled, but that's because it's basically the under-18s playing the under-23 league. We now go to Ben, who's live with Google, deciding whether we can go to the Barks and Butts semi-final.
I think it's free. There's not. I think you just turn up. There's nothing on the like the ticketing portal, but I'm pretty sure I read it somewhere and it was free.
It's not on the RBC. I've looked at the RBC Academy Twitter page and there's nothing. But that is exactly the sort of thing that people will mean. It won't touch thousands of people that information will be out there. But those who are dedicated enough to check and who just might fancy having a go. Or having a go along, maybe it'll come out on Monday. I might just be getting a little bit harsh on the club, but it really should be there now. And in terms of like streaming it and that sort of stuff, putting it online, I know that got covered in the Star meeting, and again is a thing of manpower, which I will understand that, because that is, you know, that's expecting quite a small team to work a lot of hours to cover a game on a Saturday, then turn up on a Monday to cover a game that not too many people are going to watch. Before then playing Friday and Monday, et cetera, et cetera. So the other thing we're going to talk about quite quickly in News Bites, because it's more of a developing situation than anything else, and details are pretty thin on the ground, is the new Reading FC kind of sponsors. I'm not even sure I'd justify it by saying sponsors. It's kind of Ultimate Champs Fantasy League dealy, which is supposedly linked to kind of like blockchains and NFTs and this sort of thing, where people can kind of register to play for free and then end up potentially being involved in like investing money that you can then earn money back on or whatever. If you go on the Tarleton Twitter page, we cover this more extensively. I'm kind of mentioning this more for now, Ben, because for me, it's the sort of thing that I don't want to see the club involved in these sort of things. My political opinions aren't really pro that sort of stuff for a variety of reasons that I won't get into, but it seems like a lot of clubs are involved in it. Might be about six or seven I saw tweet the same thing at the same time on the same day. So it's not just Reading, and we're not involved. For me, if it's just a minor thing that gets tweeted occasionally and it doesn't really impact the club and people don't even do it, then fine. People do have their free will at the end of the day. What I'm really not keen on seeing us do is the kind of one where it's like you ultimately pay for fan engagement, or the fans pay for engagement with the club and get to like name the team sheet or the training ground pitch in exchange for buying crypto coins or whatever. That's what I don't want fundamentally. So hopefully it's not going to lead to that. But I mean, in reality, that's kind of the way that everything's going at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know too much about that world, if I'm honest. My kind of thing is that, and again, I could well be wrong here, and I'm sure there are experts out there who've been able to analyse this in a lot more detail than we will. But it just seems a little bit like glorified gambling to me, and kind of, you know, almost gambling on the sly a little bit. Again, I might be wrong, but when it kind of popped up, I was like, well, can I physically hold it? And the answer is obviously no. So that's me out, because if I'm going to buy something, I want to physically hold it or do something with it. But it's not a good look. It's very, very on trend. And I know we're criticising the club for not being, you know, maybe as forward thinking as we want. But for me, it just doesn't sit right. And I can't really explain why, but I don't want the club particularly involved in that stuff. And I think the fact it was dropped at the end of a sort of a relatively good week means that maybe they haven't kind of read the room particularly well. I just feel that the money in the sponsorship could be diverted elsewhere. I'd much rather see us, you know, partner with a local charity or a local business or something. You know, you can go back to the Select Car Leasing and it's like, well, we've lost a gambling, you know, gambling company. Again, no offense to Casumo, that's what they do and that's how they make their money. But, you know, Select Car Leasing is a local company and it's not the greatest name, but people are kind of a bit more behind that because it is local and it's quite evident what they do. This just seems a little bit shady to me, this partnership. Because I've never heard of them, I don't really feel like it's going to yield massive amounts of revenue for us. Again, I could be wrong, but I'm just not comfortable with it. I'd rather we distance ourselves from that sort of stuff because it's a very grey area, really, that kind of world for me and I guess a lot of other people.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, if the club get paid £100,000 for a tweet, then I'm not going to tear the room apart about it. But if we are going to start, like, if it does grow into, like, a more formal relationship and, you know, players getting involved in adverts or promos for it and more stuff going on, then, yeah, but that's when it really will take her. Because, as you say, the kind of gambling-y element of it, put people being able to invest in money into it, doesn't entirely seem to me that it kind of looked like it is being advertised as effectively like a game that was sort of family-ish, kids-friendly sort of thing. Maybe I'm wrong in that, but just the vibe I got. So yeah, it's for us, I think it's just something that we all love the club to be, you know, partnered with the local bakery or whatever and stuff like that. And I know Kyocera's coming back for the anniversary game in the summer to sponsor the kits and those sorts of things, because Kyocera, a local, you know, foreign company but based locally in the UK, that sort of stuff is, you know, nice to see and everything. So it's a bit annoying when you get good things and then on the same week you get bad things. It'd be nice if that's the club could avoid that, but I'm sure they'll have a very good reason for doing it. So one to watch, I think, is probably what I'd say to that. Now, a bit of a cautious pessimism towards that. And speaking of cautious pessimism, let's round off the show with a big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Well, it's a good Friday to be in Yorkshire this year. Bramall Lane, Sheffield United, 3 p.m. kickoff for the Reading game against the Blades, who have, I said just off air before the start of the show, it really annoys me that these teams are rubbish at the start of the year. And Sheffield United were rubbish for ages. And then they've gone on and put on a decent run. And now they're like a playoff team and they're not arriving in the playoffs with one game to go. They've been there for a few weeks now. And it annoys me that Reading used to be that team that did that. But alas, that's not what happens anymore. So there are some reasons to be not too delighted going into this game. I think it's fair to say if Reading win, it will be described as a coupon buster. Not least because Sheffield United have not lost at home since the end of October. They've only conceded 2 goals at home in their last 12 games. And they've beaten us in our last 6 meetings. We've had 1 win, and that was in the FA Cup when we were Prem and they were League One since 2008. So it was Kevin Doyle scored the last time we won at Bramall Lane. So, nice and easy, straightforward 3 points, I think, Ben.
Do you know what? Sheffield's actually a great city to go. I mean, I bizarrely went up to see a friend of mine. Not bizarre because I've actually got a friend, but, you know, bizarre that we ended up going to the football and they lost to Huddersfield in the last minute. It was a crazy game, actually. And they were dreadful. They were absolutely awful. And this is when the first manager was still in charge. And this was kind of late August. And already the fans were turning on the team. And it was quite a toxic atmosphere, to be honest. Like they really weren't doing very well. And obviously, you know, they turned it around. And full credit to them. They're well and truly in the mixer to go full Sunday league for the playoffs. So they'll be gunning for a win, and they'll need a win to stay in there because the chase and pack are getting ever closer to the playoffs. I mean, I'd love a draw, to be honest. I'd be absolutely delighted with a draw. But as you said, they have been very, very good at Bramall Lane over the past 12, 13 games. And it's going to be very, very difficult for us to come away with a positive result, which is kind of why I said earlier, you know, targeting the home games against Swansea and West Brom. look, if we get a draw out of it, it would be fantastic. I don't see us winning the game. I'm a little bit, I suppose, naively a little bit more confident than I would have been sort of 2 or 3 weeks ago based on how we've played in some of those crunch games. So a draw would be lovely. But, you know, they are a good side. They're well organised. They've got some good players. And, you know, the home fans will be well up for it. You know, bank holiday weekend as well. They'll love nothing more than to, you know, to start a weekend with a win. So it's not going to be easy. And I just hope that you can be a lucky charm for once at these away games for us, Mark, and hopefully we can get something out of the game.
Yeah, well, that's the dream, isn't it? I mean, this we need a championship to happen. We need the verb of championship. We need some championship inning this game, don't we? We need a great performance from us, or a shocking one from them, or just a lucky deflection or something, or penalty or a red card or something. I think that's our best route to victory, which obviously still limits us to about 15% chance, but there we go. But it isn't a great... we went to Bournemouth and got a really good point, which did rely on a late, decent hit of the ball, which, you know, we did it, so fair enough, nothing to take away from that. But Bournemouth had a few slip-ups of that nature at home previously. And Sheffield United, I mean, they haven't had that. On the other hand, fundamentally, they cannot win every single game they play. That's just not how football works. And Reading aren't that far off Sheffield United. They've probably got more quality than us compared to the fact they're better managed and have a better mentality and will be at home. But we'll have to see how it goes. Football can work in funny ways sometimes. In terms of predictions, only Sim dared guess a win for Cardiff on the weekend. I've not got round to being able to do the full table yet, but because basically everyone said a win against Stoke, it's kind of as you were for the table. So we will deliver a full update. The next show, I'm planning on it being the Tuesday after Swansea, because it being the Easter weekend, finding personal time to put out a podcast is quite difficult. So probably a full update coming after the Swansea game. As I say, hopefully that Tuesday we'll have a podcast up for both the Sheffield United and the Swansea games. But for predictions for Sheffield United, Ben, I'll let you go first.
I'm going to say what I want to happen, and that's a 1-1 draw. But I'd also take a 0-0, which I think is highly unlikely. But my official final prediction would be a 1-1 draw. And I'm probably going to regret that at 5 o'clock on Friday, but I'm just going to stick my neck out and go for it.
See, I'm going to go for a 2-0 Sheffield United win. And to add to that, if we did bonus points, I would want my bonus question to be that Sheffield United will take the lead within the first 6 minutes, because that is the sort of thing I can see happening very much at Bramall Lane. But, you know, it's hard to go into these games with pessimism, but therefore, kind of in a sense, because we still actually have an 8-point gap, which is really big, actually. I know we speak a bit pessimistically about the club's chance and everything, but 8 points is a really decent gap to have on the teams below you in this sort of fight at this stage of the season. I guess we're just going to have to hope that see it as a free hit. You know, that's ultimately how we have to look at it. And I really don't like doing that in the Championship, because everyone can beat anyone, but that's probably the best way to approach it for our own moral sanity. So hopefully, Ben, our moral sanity will be intact in just over a week's time. Thank you very much for coming on this week.
Absolute pleasure, no problem at all. Enjoy the short week, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, absolutely. That Easter weekend, hopefully, I always end shows like this, and hopefully it'll be the time when we finally break out and everything brilliant happens. But ultimately, hopefully it's a good weekend, regardless of the football. Hopefully everyone gets the good. If you're getting the 4 days off, then brilliant. If you're not, if you're working, then hopefully it goes nice and smoothly for you. Hopefully Reading abide by that and deliver something to be happy about. And we're sat here in just over a week's time, counting our blessings that relegation to League One will not be happening to Reading this season. Wouldn't that be nice? Until then, come on, you arse.
you smile. Funny how the crowds always be betrayed, even when it seems as high.